Hello, my name is Perry. That's not short for Pierce, it's Perry, as in a Perry pear. You probably know, but just in case you don't, Perry pears are different than dessert pears or culinary pears. Perry pears are often overlooked because some nincompoops think that because we are bitter, we are useless, but they couldn't be further from the truth. We are used exclusively to make perry, which is a drink where pears are crushed, then perfectly squeezed, and then fermented into what I consider one of the best drinks out there, Perry.
Perry, you're supposed to be introducing Cider Chat.
Right. Take two. Hello, this is Perry from Ciderville. I do wish it was called Perryville, but you have to work with what you have. And you are listening to the absolute best podcast there is out there, featuring apples, all things palms, and pears.
Let's get this barrel rolling, Perry.
And you are listening to Cider Chat.
And this is episode 61. Hello and welcome to Cider Chat. My name is Aria Windcaller and I am your Cider MC on this weekly podcast where we speak with cider makers, enthusiasts, and folks within the cider trade from around the world. And this is episode number 61, and we are ringing out the year 2016 with a little bit of help from my friends Perry, the Medlars, and Mr. Quince, who brought us into this chat. And there are so many more folks who I feel just kind of keep the momentum just moving right along like a big old barrel on a dolly rolling down the plank into my truck. Wouldn't that be nice? Anyways, I want to mention, before we go into 2017, some of the cool people who have joined in on the Cider Chat Facebook page. There is Lorraine from Delaware. I do enjoy going down to Delaware, especially to get out of my spot in Ciderville where it's always kind of cold and snowy. Delaware and all that water. Then there is James, who I've been corresponding to a little bit on Twitter. He's from Little Pomona, an orchard and cidery. Hey, welcome to Cider Chat's Facebook page, James. So nice to connect with you out in the virtual world. And then there is Adam from New Zealand and Roseanne from Eugene, Oregon. Roseanne, would you say hi to my friend Jen Lynn when you see her? She's one wild and crazy gal. There is also Jennifer from the UK, so jealous, and Derek, who is in flight somewhere around the world. I imagine, Derek, you might get to land in some pretty cool places. There is also Dare from Michigan, the great state of Michigan, which has so much good cider. And also Paul from the great state of Washington in the Pacific Northwest, where there's a lot of cider happenings. Paul, it looks like you're based in Seattle. So jealous. And there is Dave, who has one of the most inviting smiles. Dave, I think you're from California, but I can't be sure. But I do know that Michael, who's also joined, is from San Diego, and I was just there. Wish we could have shared a pint of cider there, Michael. There is so many good pints to be had in that city. Speaking of which, there is Bivouac Cidery. I talked to Matthew Austin last week, and they have now started their Kickstarter campaign. So I'm going to be posting that on the Cider Chat Facebook page, the link to that, so you could get involved. There's also Dana. And Dana is involved pretty widely in the cider community. She has the Cider Box subscription service, and currently they're kicking out the Eden Cider. We know Eden from Vermont. That's up in Newport, Vermont, right over the border from Canada. So that's the first subscription service. You could check that out. That's Cider Box. It's spelled as C-I-D-R, Box. And then there is Greg from Indian Creek Farm in New York. They have lots of good apples there. You can see that on their Facebook page. And also Al from Far From the Tree Cider in Salem, Mass. Al, I was just in Salem, Massachusetts. I went out to Winter Island. Oh, that is so precious. I shouldn't even have said that on the podcast. Scratch it. Forget that I said anything about Winter Island. You definitely, folks, you do not want to check that out. Do not go to Winter Island in Salem, Massachusetts. Al will know what I mean. And the final person I'm going to be able to mention before 2017 rolls in is Nicole. And Nicole and her husband have East Men's Forgotten Ciders. Let me make sure. It is, yes, Eastman's Forgotten Ciders, and that is in Michigan. And check this out. They grow 1,000 varieties of apples. What? That's like a lot of apples. Like, how do you count them? One apple on the wall, one apple on the wall, you take one down. That's crazy. 1,000 varieties of apples. And she writes, we are able to make some unique and high variety blends. I bet you are. I'll be excited to check out some of those forgotten ciders. Maybe we'll meet at CiderCon, which leads me to the next topic. We're kind of cleaning it all up this year, folks. CiderCon is coming up in February in Chicago. I'm going to have a podcast coming out with Brian of the Northmen, and we'll talk about what's going to be happening there. And that is a place to go to if you are a cider maker or you're an up-and-coming cider maker, or even if you're an enthusiast. It's going to be so exciting. It is certainly cold in February, so there's nothing better than hunkering down with some total cider geeks talking cider, tasting cider, and some of the educational events that they have there. This is put on by the United States Association of Cider Makers, and it takes place February, let's see, I think it's the 8th. I'm flying out on the 7th. It takes place on February 8th through the 10th. And it culminates with a final, like, kind of cheers and salutations with French cider makers. They'll also be talking about keeving, which we have discussed before with Neil Worley on this podcast. And certainly the French really lead the rule with keeving, no doubt. And then to top it off in Chicago, there's a Chicago Cider Week. We're still looking for events with that. But on Saturday, February 11th at the Navy Pier is the Chicago Cider Summit. And that's going to have two sessions, and I will be there with my podcast recorder talking to the attendees. And I hope, if I haven't met you, I will meet you there. It's going to be a ton of fun. I am so excited to be in Chicago, checking all the food and looking for food pairings with cider. And oh man, I can't wait. It's going to be a wild time. I'm going to be wrapped up like a little tundra bear, I guess, and rolling out into the streets. So check that out, CiderCon and a Chicago Cider Summit. There'll be links on that in the show notes. Some of the other things I'd like to wrap up is, well, I'm not wrapping it up, but really kind of starting it and kicking it off. Cider Chat is now on Instagram. I have ventured into that world. So it wasn't that I hadn't before, but oh, I could only spread my jam so far here. And I go under the name Ciderville Cider Chat. So you could check that out and we could connect on Instagram. And of course, Cider Chat is on Twitter at Cider Chat. And I really enjoy chatting with everybody there and staying in tune with that, like, split second info that's happening around the world. Love all these forms of social media. It's really important if you're a cider maker or in the cider trade to be tuned in to social media, because that's how we get the word out there about cider. In addition, we get the word out there by being part of this podcast. So I'd like to say thank you to the patrons of Cider Chat who have joined the Cider Chat Patreon page and the following cideries: Current Cider of Percocet, Pennsylvania, Big Apple Hard Cider of New York City, Oliver's Cider and Perry in the UK, and the Cider Project in Sebastopol, and Santa Cruz Cider Company in Santa Cruz, California. This week's chat is a little bit unique because I wanted to share with you as best as I can without taking you there myself, and you know I would if I could, a glimpse into the Musée du Poirier, what translates to the Museum of Perry. Now, this took place in September of 2016, and the great thing is that this museum just, well, it just reopened. You see, back in 1983, it was opened as the Maison de la Pomme et Poirier, or what you could say in English as the House of Apple and Pear. It was created in 1983 in the very same location in Bertin, in a region that is essentially a nature park. And wouldn't you know that the day after The Nose and I recorded the podcast with Eric Bordelais, and you can listen to both part one and part two in episode 57 and 58 with Eric, we had a little bit of time. So instead of driving into Paris, as we kind of really wanted to too, I must admit, having never been to Paris, we headed in the opposite direction to the Route de Poirier. There is both a Perry route and the cider route in Normandy, and they're two separate routes. And I have to admit, after spending time with Eric in that orchard of giant and ancient pear trees, we just wanted to get even more into the pear orchard, and this museum delivered. And along the way, we started seeing pear trees all over the landscape, and they were pretty darn big too, which made me realize that it wasn't just in Eric Bordelais' orchard that you could find these magnificent elder pears, if you want to call them that. I think that kind of works. And so we set off, but it wasn't necessarily an easy trail. In fact, part of it was quite mind-boggling, as you'll hear in this little clip that I took after I stepped out of my car and tried to sort out exactly where we were out in the middle of the French landscape of Normandy. Well, Ciderville, we are in the middle of nowhere trying to find the Musée du Poirier, and it's in the town ahead in Bertin. But if you come here and you look, you're like looking around, and honest to goodness, you are just like, okay, you're there. You're there. We finally found that sign to the Musée du Poirier, but it's just so confusing. Using three different GPS systems, including some downloaded websites. But we're on the adventure, and away we go. I was standing outside the rental car, spinning around in a circle, seeing a road in every direction, feeling a bit like Dorothy in The Wizard of Oz, trying to figure out which of the four yellow brick roads to take. And that is the way it was throughout Normandy. Just when you thought you were lost, up would pop a little sign. Perhaps it said Route de Poirier, or maybe it would be Musée du Poirier. Either way, we'd take it, and maybe we'd have to back up a little bit and turn around a kilometer or so. But the countryside made it, oh, so worthwhile. And then when we thought all was lost, we finally found ourselves at the Musée de Poirier. I stood outside the car and again took a video clip that will be up on the Cider Chat Facebook page. And we have found the Musée de Poirier. It's a little sunny in this direction. You come here and there is parking. And we're gonna go down below and see what's happening. Finally found it, not too bad. A short drive from the hotel that we stayed at to go see Eric Bordelais. Listening back to those two clips, I just have to chuckle at myself. At one moment, we're lost and nothing seems right. And at the next, we have arrived. It's a white gravel drive. And there's the high-pitched roof of the museum with big letters that say Musée du, and then in even larger letters, Poirier. And a tree right flat against a building in the style called espalier is a pear tree. We decide then to get out and walk right down into the visitor center right before it's to close. It's filled with bottles of Perry, cidre or cider, and Calvados and Pamut, books, and so much more. That alone is a worthy visit, especially in Normandy, where we found that sometimes the selection of ciders and Pamut and Calvados and Perry are a little difficult to find with such a large selection. But one thing to know about these nature parks in this region is that all the gift shops do carry these libations. The greeter in the visitor center pours us some Poirier to taste. He speaks only French, but we are able to understand that soon he'll be closing the main museum building and the visitor center. But we are more than welcome to stay and enjoy the grounds. So, with just a wee bit of time, I run up to the main museum building, and at the Cider Chat YouTube channel, you will be able to take a tour with me as we walk through and see the tools of the craft. The museum is in a historical building. I believe it's the barn of the family that originally owned this property. There's cob or clay that's placed in between the boards to provide an insulation of sorts and essentially a siding. Upon entering the building, the first thing you see is a copper kettle used for distillation of the cider or perry, and the long copper tube that goes into a gorgeous vertical wooden vat. To my right is a print of a lovely pear tree in bloom with its white flowers. You enter a little further and there is a vertical wooden box. At first I'm scratching my head, and then voila, I figure it is a cider pump used to draw up the cider out of a cask. There's display cases of different knickknacks used in the craft of cider and Poirier, and trinkets that you might see even today for kind of tchotchkes to kind of celebrate the cider and Poirier. You could see again all this on the YouTube channel as I take this tour. Entering into another room, the first thing that takes your breath away is a huge press. I stand beneath it and I am dwarfed by its size. The large timber used to complete the framing of the press just baffles me even today. It's a small museum, and yet it's rich with history and worthy of a visit. Then upon exiting, the nose and I meet it up again outside. The first thing you see as you step outside is a gadage. And this is a great word to know, because it is a historical piece of equipment that some cideries even today use, if not only for holiday celebrations. Imagine a round cylinder piece of granite that is forked through with a large piece of timber. It is placed in a circular vat where apples or pears are poured. Then a horse stands on the outside and moves the cylinder around to crush the apples or pears. A difficult way to do it, but it worked. And of course, it's there at the museum. And being an interactive museum, we could not help but try our hand at it. Take a look at the YouTube clip for both myself and the nose moving the gadage about. This is a great word to know for cider folks out there looking to up their vocabulary in this trade. It's spelled G-A-D-A-G-E. There'll be a note in that at the Cider Chat webpage for episode number 61. After enjoying a little bit of playing with the gadage, the nose and I headed down the path. And I'd like to add, the path is accessible. It's on a very low slope, and you first enter into the pear orchard. Each pear tree at that time of the year was laden with fruit. The actual date was September 24th. Perfect time to visit the museum, especially if you want to find each unique pear variety and taste the fruit. They were dropping around us. We almost had to wear helmets on our head, but I was just so joyful to be frolicking on that beautiful September day and enjoying the bounty of variety just within that landscape. It was really, I have to admit, a treasure trove of exploration. Along the way, on the path, there's little signs that bring you through the museum's historical path of apples and pears in history. They begin with the Paleolithic times, the Neolithic times, antiquities, and the Middle Ages. And according to the museum, it says that apples can be traced back to 45 million years. Whereas the pear, their history is a bit more of a mystery. Doesn't that figure? If you happen out in that area and you are on the Route du Poirier, this is a must stop. The grounds are open all year round, but if you want to be able to go into the visitor center and the barn, you want to make sure that that is during April 1st or October 15th. It does say that it's closed on May 1st, so put that in your checklist. There's a small fee for a guided tour, but it's only about €2 per person. Not bad. Pack a lunch and spend at least a half a day, especially if you are able to go there at the time of year that we were able to venture, because it will take a while to really explore the orchards and each individual tree. In all, it's at least 2.5 hours from the Charles de Gaulle Paris Airport. But once you're in the thick of Normandy, there's so much to do. I even have a little tip for a gîte to stay at locally. And you could follow this gîte on Twitter at Gemme Fagite. And that's G-E-M-E-F-A-G-I-T-E. And this is a holiday home. That's what gîte means in French. Oh, what a lovely time in Normandy. I hope that you get to go there too and share your love of that region with Ciderville also. And make sure to bring something home. If you go to the Cider Chat Patreon page, there are the 10 travel tips for bringing your cider home in one piece, ready to pour it as soon as it comes out of your suitcase. Next up, we'll be speaking with a dear friend of mine about a perfect cider and food pairing. We're going to call and see if we could get Laura, who could tell us a little bit about.
Hello.
Hi, Laura.
Hi, Mia.
I am so curious about this mousse, because I looked it up in Moosewood, and I found the fresh strawberry mousse recipe. Is that what you were using?
Isn't there, on the very next page, a variation for lemon?
Well, let me see. Maybe I didn't turn the page, and wouldn't that be the bee's knees? No, I don't have that. I'm looking at a newer version.
Look in the index in the back under lemon.
Under lemon, okay. Yeah. Now, I am looking at a newer book. Maybe that's it. I see lemon, apple bread. I just see fresh strawberry mousse.
Okay. Hold on just a second. What I can do is I can take a picture of the recipe and send it to you if you want.
Well, I have a feeling it's in the older Moosewood cookbook.
Right.
So let me, I'm going to just cruise down to that, because I have that in my bookcase.
Okay.
And let me take a peek at that, okay?
Okay.
Because that must be what's going on there, is I'm looking at the wrong. Yeah, I wanted to share this on Cider Chat, because it was just so good, and I loved how, you know, we were able to blend that with cider. I just thought it was freaking amazing.
Well, we rinsed the glasses with it. It was so yummy, and it turned into like a fizzy, like an ice cream soda kind of.
I know. That was, the way it kind of like got all like a little head on top.
It foamed up. It was very neat.
Yeah. So I'm looking at my older Moosewood copy, and again, I'm not seeing that recipe.
Alright, hang on. Maybe it's Enchanted Broccoli Forest.
Oh. Well, I have that, too.
You do? Do you have that handy?
I do. Let me just...
Okay, check that.
Okay. Let me go grab that one. Oh, my goodness. How was your day so far?
The day today was good. I've been home. Eva's here. I was, doing laundry, and I did a bunch of sanding on the road and where it's icy.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That was good.
A lot melted today.
A lot did melt, thank goodness.
I know. It's crazy how bad it was. All right.
There's a big storm coming, you know that?
I know. Well, I don't know. It's kind of varying on what they say it's going to do, so.
Okay.
I'm not, like, super worried about it, but.
Okay.
Maybe you heard something different. I don't know. And now I'm looking up lemon as we're talking here. I'm just going to start with lemon. And it's actually not Enchanted. It's in the yellow one.
So the different editions of this book change.
No kidding.
Interesting. All right, I'm coming into the kitchen.
Oh, yeah, this one does not have the orange liqueur in it either.
So maybe are you in Moosewood or...
I'm in Moosewood cookbook.
Moosewood, okay.
Yeah, the new Moosewood cookbook.
Mine says new revised edition. And it says happy 15-year birthday on the front.
Mine does not say that.
I got it in 1995, so it's not all that new.
Well, right.
Not there anymore.
I know.
Okay, so let me just look here for a second.
Okay.
All right, this is called Simply Lemon Mousse, and it's on page 215 in this version of Moosewood.
Well, mine's on page 215 also. Let's just compare our recipes here.
Okay.
What do you start?
This one has a quarter cup of cornstarch, which I thought was too much.
Okay. Did you add?
I go lighter than that. It was very dense. I had to adjust it.
So would you say?
It has a half a cup of sugar.
Yeah.
A half a cup of the lemon juice.
Yeah.
It says from a California lemon.
Mm-hmm. And did you get like a whole half a cup in that lemon?
No. I had to supplement it, but not very much.
With what did you supplement it with?
I had a bottle of lemon juice.
Okay. And just going back to that cornstarch, so if you didn't use a quarter cup, you used like...
No, I did use a quarter cup, but when I hooked it over the stove and it thickened up, it got really thick.
Okay.
And I thought it almost tasted a little bit cornstarchy, and it could have done with just a little bit less.
Okay, good to know.
But maybe I didn't measure that carefully either. Maybe it was a little more than a quarter cup.
Okay, country cooking. All right.
Then half a cup of water.
Mm-hmm.
It said a teaspoon of grated lemon rind, which I actually didn't put in at all.
Right, because I always feel funny about putting rind in, unless it's like from a tree. that you know?
Right. I would have done it, but what happened was I squeezed the juice first, and then the rind was too soft and floppy, and I couldn't grate it easily, and I just gave up on it.
Okay.
All right. And I thought it didn't hurt. It wasn't, you know, the recipe wasn't harmed by that.
No, not at all.
2 egg whites.
Mm-hmm.
1/2 pint of heavy cream.
Yep.
That's it. And then they say berries or orange rind, lemon, you know.
Okay.
And then the process is you mix the sugar and the cornstarch with the lemon juice and water, and you whisk it.
Mm-hmm.
And then you cook that until it goes thick, 5 to 8 minutes.
You had to keep on stirring that the whole time, right?
It says whisking constantly.
And were you whisking constantly?
Well, maybe not constantly.
Good enough.
I might have stepped away for a second.
Oh, my goodness. Well, I didn't taste it in that mousse. It was so good.
I'm such a rebel.
That's right. You are a rebel.
As they say, whisking constantly, I don't have to.
That's right. You go, girl.
Anyway, then you place the egg whites. You beat up the egg whites until they're stiff but not dry. And then you fold that. After it's cool, you fold that into the lemon mixture.
And was that pretty, you know, that's where you normally mess up in a mousse, is when you're folding in the egg whites. The stiff
I did have to loosen up that lemon mixture some because it was really dense.
Okay.
And I did add some water before I mixed it in.
Oh, okay.
It's probably important that it cools.
All right.
I put it outside and it was really cold then, so
right.
It cooled down right away.
Okay, so you pulled it out and you kind of shook it up a little bit to fold in the egg whites.
I added a little bit of water.
Okay.
Before I put in the egg white.
Great.
But I don't think you're supposed to. I mean, that was just because it seemed like it was too thick.
Mm-hmm.
And then you fold in the egg white, and then you chill that.
Okay.
They say for at least an hour.
Right. Yeah, that's
then
what I see. Yep.
You whip the whipped cream and fold that in.
Mm.
So it's like double folded. First it gets folded with the whites, and then it gets folded with the whipped cream.
Mm-hmm.
So light and fluffy like a cloud.
It looked like a cloud. It was so beautiful. And the taste.
Oh, my God. It was amazing.
And to go with cider, I thought we were drinking cidre and then that French cider and then an American cider. Each one, it actually, I thought, complemented it perfectly.
I loved it with the French cider.
Yes, I agree.
Because that was so light and had a very, you know, it didn't have a dominating flavor.
Mm-hmm.
So it didn't feel like the cider flavor competed at all with the mousse flavor.
Mm-hmm. Right. I kind of liked it all. I thought the lemon, you know, it's really tangy and has that zip in it. And that's why I think it really, it's like the perfect, you know, imagine like a lemon meringue pie with cider. It would be fantastic too.
Yeah, similar.
Yeah. Really cool. Mm.
Yeah, well, I loved it.
Mm-hmm. I'm thinking it's like
I had some left over after that night and I had it on my waffles in the morning.
Wow.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Blueberry waffles with lemon mousse on top.
Dios míos. And with
a glass
of cider next to that, I'd be so happy. You know,
we live it up around here.
We do. You know, in France, one of the primary ways that people often drink cider is at a crêperie. So, you know, with crepes. And
oh, okay.
So having it with waffles or in the morning like that, it is not, you know, wouldn't be unheard of.
Yeah.
Just so you know.
Yeah, very nice.
Very cool.
So you're going to make this?
I am, because I still have some of those lemons left.
Nice.
And I thought, you know, sharing it with Ciderville here would be, like, perfect, because I'm thinking, like, this would be a really nice little peppy thing to make for, like, New Year's Eve, too.
Yeah, or a Hanukkah party.
Or a Hanukkah party. Or any kind of holiday party.
That's right.
All right. Cool. Well, thank you, Laura. I so appreciate
it. You're welcome. Good luck with it. I hope it comes out fabulously.
Yes. I'll save you some.
Oh, goody.
A big tip of the glass to my dear friend Laura, who made this recipe for solstice this year. We had a celebration outside with a fire, and we're sharing all different kinds of ciders. She served it in some small cups, and when we were done, we rinsed the cups with cider. And it foamed up, as she mentioned, and it became like kind of a double dessert. First we had the lemon mousse, and then we had the cider in the lemon mousse cup. It was so pretty. I almost wanted to just serve cider like that next time. The tanginess of the lemon is a perfect blend with cider. We used the lemon. We were looking at the recipe out of the new Moosewood Cookbook by Molly Katzen. There'll be a link in the show notes to this. And I know that she did a variation. So again, if you want to just write it down right now, it is a quarter cup cornstarch, a half cup sugar, a half cup freshly squeezed lemon juice, a half cup water, 1 teaspoon grated lemon rind, 2 egg whites at room temperature, and a half pint of heavy cream. You mix the cornstarch, sugar, and freshly squeezed lemon juice and add the water. Then you heat that up in a saucepan. And as we were kind of joking, making sure that you keep it stirring, because if you've ever made homemade pudding, it does settle up quick. That's a cornstarch doing that. Then on the side, as that little concoction has once finally stiffened up a bit, you put that off the stove, let it cool down. She put it outside. It's winter here in our part of Ciderville. And in the meanwhile, whipped up those 2 egg whites, and they'll become stiff, kind of like little white frosted peaks. Then you slowly fold that into the cornstarch and lemon juice. Once that's done, and hopefully it's not too thick because you haven't added too much cornstarch, you then add in the whisked up heavy cream. So make sure that you whisk up that heavy cream again so it's in like nice whipped frosting, and then fold that in. The fresh lemons that I had brought home from California on my recent trip, as I was visiting my family there, I got it from my nephew Michael's home. He has a beautiful lemon tree, and he was thinking, I don't know what to do with these lemons. And I said, I'll bring some home. I did. I gave a lemon to Laura, and this is what she made. So once again, making a masterpiece out of a lemon. And what a perfect cider pairing. I hope you could try that. I will have notes on this on the show notes to episode 61. Well, 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 I just thought this was going to be a mini chat this week, but I have so much fun hanging with you, Ciderville. It's just a really big blast. And I do enjoy this whole cider pairing. I know that Jeff has really got me revved up a bit, and certainly all the delectable cider pairings I've had out there as I travel about. And sometimes you find it right in your own backyard with good friends and family. While you're kicking back over this holiday weekend of New Year's and entering 2017, how's about helping this podcast get a little bit of limelight on iTunes? A review and rating, it takes just a moment. You just go to the Cider Chat link on iTunes and click review and rating. You can leave a 5-star rating, and that really shoots us up into the spotlight and helps promote a cider around the world, because that's what it's going to be all about in 2017. A bit more of a cider and food pairing, I think, too. I'm really digging that thread, and that is one that I don't want to leave behind. Moving forward into 2017 with you. And I'll be looking forward to sharing the next episode, which will be on the person that I vote for as the sexiest man in Ciderville for 2017. Stay tuned for that. Well, now, this is Real Wind Caller signing off for now. I'm looking forward to seeing you in Ciderville. We'll be right back.
Yeehaw!